not cultivate our motivation and really rejoice at this opportunity we have to reflect and learn about karma and its results, because this understanding will help us tremendously in our life to make wise decisions and to understand why things happen the way they do. So let's remember, as we're listening, that we're doing it not only for our own welfare, but in order to cultivate an altruistic intention to attain full enlightenment, to fulfill our human potential for the benefit of all living beings. So let's keep that as our motivation for learning and discussing today. Okay, so we're going to be talking about karma today. Usually when we talk about karma, I go through the 10 non-virtues and the 4 general characteristics of karma and things like that. But I think what I'll do today is just speak a few words in general about karma, and then talk maybe about 10 kinds of virtuous actions that we can do that really enhance our life. So karma basically means action, yeah, and it refers to our physical, verbal, and mental actions. So it's not just the physical and verbal action, it's the mind or the intention that's motivating that action together with that action that forms the karma. Okay? So it's not just waving my hand that's karma. It's like, what's the intention for waving my hand? Or if I'm speaking to somebody, what's the intention for the words that I'm uttering? You know, am I trying just to communicate some information? Am I doing something because I want to make a good impression on somebody so that they'll give me something? Am I doing something? Am I saying it because, you know, somebody's hurting and I want to be kind to them and ease their grief? You know, what's the motivation for what I'm doing? And so that mental factor of intention, that's the karma that we're talking about, okay? And it comes out, of course, verbally and mentally and physically as well. So we're creating karma all the time. Some of that karma is going to be strong enough to propel future rebirths. Some of that karma will also ripen in terms of what we experience in the future, what kind of environment we're born in, what kind of habitual tendencies for what kind of actions, you know, that we have. So the whole idea behind karma is the principle of cause and effect, the principle of conditioning. In other words, that things don't happen just out of nowhere. You know, that everything that occurs is a conditioned phenomena. That means it's dependent upon causes and cooperative conditions that happen before it. Okay, so nothing's kind of random, chaotic, without any cause. Because everything would break down if things were like that, wouldn't they? You know, you wouldn't go to work because then you'd have no assurity of getting paid. Of course, you don't anyway, but, you know, generally that works, doesn't it? yeah, there's cause and effect. And, you know, if there were no cause and effect, you wouldn't cook lunch because, you know, cooking lunch would have nothing to do with having lunch. There would be no relationship between what came before and what comes after. So the whole idea of karma is this conditioning process, causal process, that happens not on a physical level, because that's one type of causality, but on a mental level. In other words, that our thoughts, you know, condition what our future habitual thought patterns will be, what kind of rebirth we're attracted to, what we experience, and so on and so forth. Okay? So the whole idea of karma and its effects is talking about causality, but, you know, in a different way than science is. Science is focused on causality as it relates to material things. But as we know, there's many things that exist in this universe that are not made of atoms and molecules, that are not material. So there still has to be some causality functioning there, doesn't there? Yeah? And so, because the karma is this mental factor of intention, and you know, and so of course that's relating to what we're thinking and what our emotions are at any particular time. And so this is a level of causality that we want to really pay attention to, because we want to become aware of what our intentions are and then choose what kind of intentions we want to cultivate because they're beneficial, and what kind of intentions we want to do something about because they create havoc in our mind and in our lives. Okay? And can you see that some mental states and some intentions create very good results in your life? You know? And other intentions that are kind of murky and, you know, where you're not thinking very clearly, or when you're just thinking about yourself and your own ego wants, that those intentions also often bring a lot of difficulties in our life. You know, if we really look at our experience, this becomes rather clear. And so then it helps us to understand that our happiness and suffering comes from inside, from these intentions inside, not just from the experience outside. Okay? And that we can train ourselves to have some influence and control over what these motivations are and over how we respond to situations, so that when external things happen, we don't have to have a certain emotional response. There actually is a choice, and we can train ourselves, because training involves this conditioning process, you know, to see things in a different way. Okay? So, you know, somebody's very rude to us, and our usual habitual reaction is, oh, they don't like me, well, I don't like them either. And then, you know, we have an intention full of kind of disgust or anger or, you know, this kind of brush them off feeling, okay? And we think that that's the only way we can respond to somebody's criticism or somebody's rudeness. But that's not true. You know, there's a choice happening at some point in our mind. We may not be aware of that choice because we're so habitual to making it in one direction, to assume, well, you know, they're being mean to me, therefore I don't like them, I don't have to be polite to them. You know, we may be habituated with that, but that isn't an automatic only way to respond. You know, we can see somebody who's rude or somebody who's criticizing us and view them as somebody who's suffering, and then instead of having a harmful intention towards them, have a compassionate intention towards them. No. Oh, why are they dumping their anger on me? It's because they must be unhappy. Oh, compassion. So we can train our mind to have this kind of response. You know? And if we train well, then the other response begins to go down, you know, because there isn't so, we lessen the conditioning influence of that, and we're particularly taking charge and reconditioning our mind to see things in a different way. Okay? So that's the whole idea behind learning about karma, is so that we can look at our own mind and decide, you know, what thoughts are beneficial and which intentions do we want to really enhance, and which thoughts create havoc, and so therefore which intentions do we want to subdue so that they don't take over and run the show. Okay? And we want to do this because we see that, you know, what we do in the present influences what we experience in the future. Okay, and what we experience in the present comes from what we did in the past. Okay, so if you're miserable now, then, oh, I created the cause for misery in the past. You mean it's not somebody else's fault? Well, yep, that's what we mean. Yeah, that we can't, you know, there's no use going through life blaming other people. Yeah, but if we recondition ourselves to something different now, then we can change what the future is going to be. Okay, so that's a little bit as an introduction to karma. What I thought to go through now was just talk about, you know, the 10 virtuous actions according to the Pali Canon. Usually I teach these according to the Mahayana tradition, but I thought some of you are quite familiar with that, and, you know, what do they say, variety is the spice of life, that you might like hearing about, you know, the 10 virtuous actions from the Pali viewpoint. And so these fit very well with what's usually taught in the Mahayana viewpoint, okay? So, of course, the first one is generosity. Yeah, so this also happens to be the first of the 6 far-reaching practices, okay? But with generosity, that's a way to act, you know, when we practice generosity, to act with a virtuous intention. In other words, to cultivate the mind that takes delight in giving, okay? Now, of course, when we give, it doesn't mean just giving any old thing. Yeah, because otherwise we could say, oh, you know, all the people who are funneling money to the terrorists are practicing generosity. You know, they're making donations. Yeah. Or, you know, you could say, oh, Iran is practicing generosity towards Hamas by giving them weapons. Well, no, that's not what we mean by generosity, okay? Because it's not just the intention to give, it's also what you give, okay? And if the gift you give is actually going to be for the welfare of who you give it to and the welfare of others, okay? So giving, you know, somebody who has a drug, an alcohol problem, drugs and alcohol, that's not generosity. That's kind of, you know, stupidity. Okay? So it's not just the intention to give and share, but it also has to be conjoined with some wisdom that really cares about the long-term benefit of the other person. But in general, you know, generosity is a mind that takes delight in giving. And this is a very happy mind when we cultivate it. Okay, and it's a mind that is free from miserliness. It isn't a mind that's all worried about how the economy's going. Okay, and you can see, you know, how uptight people get worrying about the economy. You know, whether or not, you know, to what extent they're influenced by the state of the economy, we don't know. But if they worry about the economy and are very stingy as a result of that, even if their own particular situation is not affected a lot by the economy, their mind becomes very unhappy and they become very stingy and act out that stinginess in their interactions with others. You know, and what does stinginess produce? You know, well, in our own mind, it produces this mentality of scarcity and unhappiness and increases the sense of mine and you can't have it. And when we act in a stingily, class, you have a verb, an adverb, you act with stinginess, stingily. Yeah, with stinginess. Maisha, you act, what? Yeah, okay. You know what I mean. Yes, so we act that way. Then what kind of energy does that, affect others with? You know, what are we putting into the universe? Well, we're just, increasing that mentality of there's a limited pie and there's not enough and what's going to happen and let's worry. And, and it just produces more unhappiness in the world. Yeah? So it doesn't, that kind of mentality doesn't do much good for ourselves. And it's not a very good gift to give to others, all that, kind of tension about it. But if we have a mind of generosity, then even if we just have a little, we share that. And so the mind is very free, It's free to share what we have. So that mind itself is quite joyful, quite happy. It's free from the pain of the, limited pie view. That if somebody else has it, I won't get it. Okay? But it's a mind really that is very relaxed. So it creates virtue in our own mind, and of course it influences others in quite a good way. Especially, when it's done with wisdom and thoughtfulness, that generosity. Then the second one is ethical conduct. Okay, so that means refraining from harmfulness. So harming others physically, harming others by our speech, and harming others by generating a lot of ill will and malice and resentment towards them. Okay? So, speech is a big one. Yeah, of course, our speech comes from our mind, so we have to be careful of what goes on in our mind. Then, of course, physically harming others is very damaging. But for many of us, speech is our chosen weapon of mass destruction. Isn't it? Yeah. And we can use our speech to cause so much havoc in people's life, to really hurt people's feelings tremendously, to create discord and disharmony and confusion. Our speech can just be so damaging if we're not careful. Okay? See, even the turkeys agree. So that was a turkey, wasn't it? That's not our chipmunk. Chipmunks sound different. So we practicing ethical conduct, which is this, wish to restrain ourselves. We may have some kind of negative intention pop into our mind, but we're not going to act on it. We're not going to cultivate it mentally so that it becomes resentment or greed or something like that. We're not going to cultivate, we're not going to express it verbally so that we hurt others' feelings and create discord with others. We're not going to express it physically by damaging others or their environment. Okay? So ethical conduct is a practice taught by all religious traditions, so is generosity for that matter. I think in Buddhism, maybe one thing that we add to it is not just how our generous and ethical actions affect others, but also how those actions, those intentions, affect ourselves and condition our own mind so that it influences what we experience ourselves in the future. Yeah. And you can see, if our mind doesn't practice ethical conduct, we become very paranoid and suspicious of other people. Very untrusting. Because if we're not a trustworthy person, because we're not practicing ethical conduct, then we kind of naturally, on some kind of level, assume other people are also going to be untrustworthy and are going to cheat us and hurt us and are out to get us. Because they too aren't practicing ethical conduct. Okay? If we manipulate people by having a negative intention but doing a behavior that appears superficially to be nice, then we're going to assume that other people are equally manipulative. And we're going to be very super vigilant and untrusting. Okay? So these are the kinds of things that we see if we really take charge of our mind and cultivate good intentions. We can still be wise in how we evaluate others, but without going to the thing of being untrusting, suspicious, paranoid, Italian word of, staccato, you're apart from everybody, you're alienated, you're on your own, separate from everybody else. Okay? So that kind of mental attitude comes about because of our lack of mental restraint. Okay? Makes some sense to you? Do you see how it works? Yeah? Okay, then the third virtuous action is meditation. Yeah? And so, sitting down and meditation means to cultivate virtuous attitudes, to familiarize ourselves with virtuous attitudes and emotions. So taking the time to do a regular daily meditation practice, to maybe do some recitation of different verses and contemplate their meaning, because that helps us steer our mind in a good direction. Or do, some daily purification practice, do some daily analytic meditation, do just have some time alone each day where we really look at our mind and consciously try and steer it in a good direction. Okay, then fourth is humility and reverence. Yeah. So in America, humility, throw out the door. And reverence is for the almighty dollar. Okay? Now, so this doesn't get us anywhere good, does it? Okay? Just kind of being ostentatious and boasting and, here's me and here are all my good qualities and blah, 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 and being very irreverent. Okay, not irrelevant. Irreverent, okay. That kind of sarcastic mind, where we're not, we don't have respect for things that are worthy of respect, but we're sarcastic, we're skeptical, we're kind of, dismissive. It's kind of like a perpetual 16-year-old mind. Yeah, remember how we were when we were 16? This kind of, up yours mind. So, that kind of attitude, it's not very beneficial, is it? It doesn't make us happy. It doesn't make for good relationships. You can see the kind of conditioning, the seeds, the imprints it puts in our own mind. Yeah. And so learning to be humble. I know it sounds un-American, but actually, it's a very beneficial mental trait. And I think what happens is if we're humble, because put it this way, we're so afraid that if we're humble, nobody will see our good qualities. Okay, so therefore we think we have to announce them. But actually, when we announce our good qualities, do people really respect them, or do they think we're boastful? They usually think we're pretty conceited, and they're right. Okay, when we're humble and people see our good qualities, then they appreciate them, don't they? And they really they have respect because they see that we're not making some kind of big identity out of our good qualities. We're not on some kind of ego trip. Yeah. But we're just living our values, living our principles, cultivating good qualities simply because it's good to do that. Not because we're trying to win approval or get a job or be the most well-respected popular person, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but just doing something because we know it's a good thing to do. Okay, so really training the mind to cultivate respect for qualities and people who are worthy of respect, and help our mind to have that sense of reverence in our life for what's good. Because if we don't have a sense of reverence, then our life is just filled with flippancy and sarcasm, and we're miserable, aren't we? We have no purpose or sense of beauty and meaning in our life, because all we're doing is picking faults. Okay? So having a mind that's humble towards our own good qualities, reverent and respectful towards what's good and towards other good qualities, something that really creates mental happiness for ourselves, and then acts as a good motivation for acting kindly for others. And I just remember one of my teachers, the incarnation of one of my teachers, actually. So he was, I don't know, he was a teenager when he told me this. My teacher was his previous life, but this is the incarnation. And so we were talking about this one day, and he said, if I'm a good cook, I don't need to go around telling everybody I'm a good cook. Because if I cook and they eat it, then they know. And I don't need to announce it. Yeah? So it's the same way. If we have some good qualities, you know, people with eyes will see it. Now, of course, a lot of people are kind of blind to good qualities, just in the same way that we're blind to other people's good qualities. Okay? But if we enact them enough, somehow people will eventually learn to see. And we don't need to be ostentatious about the whole thing. I remember at one of the Mind Life conferences with His Holiness, because we were talking about how the sense of self is developed differently in Eastern cultures and in Western cultures. And so there was one psychologist there who was Asian American, but, you know, her upbringing was very much in the Asian way of, you know, being humble and, you know, and so on. And she was talking about her high school graduation, and when different, you know, Euro-Americans were getting praised by their teachers or whoever, they were sitting up looking at the audience, smiling, making eye contact with everybody, standing up straight like this, look at me, somebody's praising me. And she said she got praised, and just instinctually she looked down, you know, and just stayed with her eyes looking down and, you know, kind of self-contained. Because she was raised that, you know, it's not good to go around saying, oh, look at me, I'm getting praised. You know? And it's true, if you notice that, you know, how do we react? Oh, praise. Is everybody noticing that I'm getting praised? Yeah? Or do we just kind of accept it in a humble way? Okay? So something just to look and to train ourselves with. Okay, then, 1, 2, 3, 4. Fifth one is offering service. Okay? So this is, you know, an aspect of generosity, but it's generosity of our time, generosity of our physical help or verbal help. It's offering service and giving to others, you know, in a very overt way. Okay? And so this is kind of putting our actions where our mouth is. Okay? Or walking our talk, so to speak. Yeah. So really, when there's an opportunity to be of help, to be of service, when we have the time, when we have the capacity, you know, then to do that. Again, without stinginess, without reserve, without fear, but also being practical, and don't offer to do something if you're not confident that you can actually fulfill it, because then it leaves other people in a difficult position. But if, you know, we can be clear about what we can offer in terms of our time and our energy and have a very joyful mind of offering service, then it really is a very virtuous action. So I was very impressed with Obama's United We Serve campaign. I was very upset that that did not make the headlines in the paper, because I thought that should have been what they... the headlines you know, were. And instead, you kind of had to, you know, search it out to find it. But really encouraging citizens to volunteer and do volunteer work and to reach out in our communities and help others in, you know, according to whichever talents we have. Yeah. And so people have different talents, different, you know, nonprofits in our communities have different needs. And so really seeking out and doing some volunteer work and just, you know, giving to the community in return. Yeah. And if we live in a family, that's a community. The Abbey here is a community. Our workplace is a community. If you're in school, that's a community. And so seeing whatever, you know, communities that we're a part of, because we're all a part of multiple communities, that it's not just a question of what can I get from that community, but what can I give towards it? How can I benefit everybody living in that community? Because when I contribute to the community, then I live in a place with happy people. Yeah? When I only have a mind of what can I get from the community, then I'm going to live with a lot of unhappy people. Yeah? So this whole idea of offering service, of doing things that are not required of us. Okay? So at work, you know, even if it's not your job, you clean up around the coffee machine. Yeah? Without you going, oh, these people who are supposed to clean up around the coffee machine, they just leave a mess and they expect me to clean it up every day. Who do they think they are? So I'm just going to clean it up and I wish they'd get their act together. Not with that kind of attitude. Okay? But just, you know, okay, somebody needs to clean it. Might as well be me. Yeah? And if we look at it, you know, is it spectacular suffering to clean up around the coffee machine? You know, is it great suffering that is going to damage us forever? You know, we have this weird thing in our country, if it's not fair. Yeah, I did it before, it's your turn. I did enough, you should put out now. Okay, so that's always the mind that's keeping very good track of what we did for others, but not very good track of what others have done to help us. So we always feel that we've done more than they have done. Okay, therefore they should step up and, you know, do this 5-minute task that, you know, is going to cause us incredible suffering. But you know what's going to cause us the incredible suffering? Is the attitude we have that it's not fair, that I shouldn't have to do it. That's what causes us the suffering. The actual action is not a big thing, is it? You know, taking out the garbage, it takes like 3 minutes or something. It's a neutral action, isn't it? Taking out the garbage. It's not virtuous, not non-virtuous. It's just a neutral action. Our mind can make ourselves so miserable. You know, I'm always the one that takes out the garbage. How come nobody else in this place does it? Yeah. And then when we have that attitude, okay, even if we take out the garbage, we have a non-virtuous mental state because it's full of anger, you know, that we're spreading out into the environment. And we're making ourselves so unhappy over a task that is not great suffering. Is it? You know? But it's the mind that says, it's not fair, somebody else should do it. That's the mind that causes the suffering. Yeah. Whereas if we train ourselves to have a mind of, somebody needs to do it, I'm happy to. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, I get to contribute to the welfare of this community. I get to reach out and do something for others. Yeah. And that's why I was so impressed when I saw, you know, the president and his wife, you know, serving food at the homeless shelter. And his holiness, Dalai Lama, went and served food at a homeless shelter. Okay? Now, like, yeah, why not? Why not? And so many different things to do, you know. But sometimes we need to practice it, not with strangers, but with the people we live with, you know, because those are the ones we, yeah. Well, we act out the thing if it's not fair with strangers and with the people we live with, yeah. Okay. So offering service. Then the sixth one is dedicating merit. Okay, and so this is also a branch or a type of generosity. So whenever we've done some virtuous activity, then dedicating the merit or the positive karma, the good imprints or seeds we've placed on our minds, dedicating that so they will ripen for the benefit of all beings. Okay, so really spreading the good result around to everybody and dedicating it. Mm-hmm. A practice that can make the mind very happy. And then the next one, the seventh one, is rejoicing. So rejoicing kind of is another form of generosity in a way, because rejoicing is somebody else did the good action, and then we're rejoicing in it. Okay? And by rejoicing, we create more merit, and then we can practice generosity of the merit by dedication. Okay, but rejoicing is a very important practice, and it's a big element in releasing jealousy. And one of my teachers, you know, because rejoicing comes in the seven limb practice that we do all the time, that whenever we come to that limb, he stops and there's a 20-minute meditation. Okay, and I think it's to emphasize to us, rejoice at the goodness that you see in the world. Rejoice at the virtuous actions of other people. Overcome your jealousy at others' good fortune, at others' virtuous actions, you know, and just rejoice at the goodness there is in this world. You know, stop competing with others. Stop comparing yourself with others. Stop wanting to come out best and just rejoice at others' good qualities, their good fortune, you know, whatever they have, and feel happy about it. Yeah? And if we do, if we train ourselves in this way, then it becomes so much easier to feel happiness. Yeah? Because usually we only feel happy when something good happens to me. Yeah? When we train our mind to feel happy when something good happens to everybody else, then there's, you know, we're going to have much more happiness, aren't we? And so instead of thinking, you know, everything good happens has to happen to me, and I get jealous when somebody else gets praised, when somebody else gets the good effect or whatever. Instead of, you know, tormenting our mind by jealousy, just to train the mind to be happy. Okay? Then eighth is listening to Dharma teachings, so that's a virtuous action. Really, you know, choosing to put our time in accord with our values. So if we value the Dharma because we see that the teachings lead us in a good direction, that we learn something helpful from them, then making an effort to go to teachings. Yeah. Instead of taking teachings for granted, instead of saying, I've heard enough teachings, I think I'll go out and do something else for a while. You know, but really seeing the benefit of hearing the teachings again and again and again. Okay? And I really see that, you know, when you go to the teachings that His Holiness gives, very often they're on a text. You know, you have all the lamas and geshis sitting like around here. And those lamas and geshis have received teachings on this text innumerable times and have even given teachings themselves on that text. And yet they still go to listen to it when His Holiness teaches. You know, so it's showing, wow, it's helpful every time we hear a teaching. It's helpful. It reminds us of something important. The teaching goes in at a deeper level. And even while the teaching is happening, we have the opportunity to think about it, and that thought process is creating virtue. And then we take that teaching away with us. We train our mind in it. So we create more merit afterwards by remembering what we've heard. Okay? So really making an effort to go to teachings and listening well when we're there. Okay. Then the ninth one The eighth one was listening to teachings. The ninth one is teaching, is giving Dharma teachings. Okay, so if you have the ability, you know, then or the opportunity, then to give Dharma teachings. Of course, only teaching what we feel confident of, that we, you know, what we have some experience of ourselves that we're sure is correct. You know, not having heard a complicated teaching once and then thinking we're the tea shop guru and going out and, you know, discoursing on emptiness when we have no clue what it means, but we think we do. Okay? But there's all sorts of different ways to teach the Dharma. You know, just with our friends and our relatives, you know, when we're talking to people who are distressed, we can explain Buddhist ways of handling negative emotions with just plain, ordinary, simple language. No Buddhist language at all. Okay? That's generosity of the Dharma. Or when we see animals and insects and we say mantra so that they hear, it's generosity of the Dharma. Okay? Helping to print Dharma books for free distribution or giving Dharma books for others. Even we're not able to give the teaching, we're able to give other people some written material, you know, by which they can learn the Dharma. So developing generosity of the Dharma in one way or another. Okay, and then the tenth one is called straightening our view. In other words, cultivating correct views. Okay, so, you know, having heard the Dharma teachings and then think about them and really think, you know, what is the correct view here? You know, how do things really exist? What is the real nature of causes and conditions? How does this causal process work? Yeah, what are effective means for taming the mind? So really cultivating the correct view of what the Dharma is, what the nature of reality is, how to follow the path and actualize the path. Okay? So this takes some time to actually cultivate the right view. We shouldn't just assume that, oh, I have some idea, so because I think it's the right view. Yeah, that's one of our big problems. Okay? But to really, you know, think about the teachings that we hear. Look at our own thoughts and analyze them. And are we thinking in an effective way, in a realistic way, in a beneficial way? Do we have a correct view of the topic? Or are we just kind of have a view that accords with what our ego likes to believe? Yeah? Because lots of times, I think we have an emotion a certain way of thinking gives us a pleasant feeling. So we say that way of thinking is correct. Yeah? Okay. So first we decide what we believe, then we get all the data to enforce it. Yeah? So it could be, so-and-so talked behind my back, and so I'm entitled to revenge, and people have a sense of self-satisfaction with that. You know? Oh, it's very logical. Somebody harmed me, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I have a right to get revenge and harm them back. That's the correct way of thinking. See, even the Bible agrees. Okay? From Buddha's viewpoint, that's a wrong view. Now, who was it Gandhi said? It's just, I do tooth for tooth and everybody's going to be blind. Yeah? So, instead what you find is forgiveness. You know? Oh, you know, the whole world may agree that I'm right and the other person's wrong and I can retaliate. But is that really the correct view? Is it really the cause of happiness? Yeah? And then when we see, no, actually learning to forgive, releasing my anger, is going to bring much more peace in my own mind and much more peace in the world. Okay, so those are the 10 virtuous actions, according to the Pali Canon. There's a few minutes for questions. questions and maybe answers and comments if you have any. Yeah.
At the beginning, talking about the karmic intention, motivation versus intention. I'm confused in there. Is it like intention? I intend to do this. I just intend to do that. In my mind, I'm going to walk out the door. But the motivation can be anything. So are those both karmic, the intention and the motivation?
Motivation, yeah. Okay, so the difference between motivation and intention. Intention is the thought, like, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. What makes the intention virtuous, non-virtuous, or neutral is the other mental factors that are together with that mind, you know. I'm going to walk out the door because, you know, I'm going to slam it behind me and let everybody know I'm mad and that they should do what I want. Okay, so then you have a mind with a mental factor of intention, but anger in it. So that anger colors that mental factor of intention and makes it something negative.
Okay.
Yeah, probably the whole thing. Yeah, would be called motivation, as far as I understand. You know, I don't know all the technicalities of what they include in motivation, but it seems to me the motivation would be the whole thing.
So the intention and those factors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, that also involves knowing what object you want to, you know, act towards and so on and so forth. Okay.
I remember once when you were teaching on far-reaching attitudes, and your instruction was to apply each of them to the other.
Yes.
So, in listening to this 10, a lot of them seem to kind of reflect on generosity, like offering teaching and offering service and rejoicing. So it was kind of a similar thing of taking some of them and flipping them around. So
right. Yeah. Right, yeah. If you look at these, many of them have to do with opening our heart and giving to others, don't they? You know? Yeah. Many of them are just expansions on generosity. Because if you look at it, okay, if we start with generosity, then ethical restraint is being able to give to others without harming them while you're doing so. So it pertains to generosity. Okay, meditation, how it relates to generosity, cultivating a generous heart in your meditation so that you can act that way afterwards. Humility and reverence, okay. Yeah, if we have that attitude, it's much easier to be generous. And we can be generous with that attitude. Offering service, form of direct generosity. Dedicating merit is generosity of our karma, our merit. Rejoicing is, you know, having a generous heart that rejoices in others' welfare, you know, and their reception. Listening to teachings, oh, that's gimme, 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 isn't it? I take teaching. Okay, no, but you can approach, I take teachings, you know. But you can approach it with an attitude of generosity that I want to learn in order to cultivate a good heart so that I can be more generous to others. Giving teachings is a form of generosity, and then cultivating the correct views, you know, is something that can sustain. That's kind of like the wisdom aspect of our generosity. Yeah. So it's interesting when you look at these things, you see that, you know, it isn't like virtuous actions are all inherently existent, you know, solid things with circles around them that don't apply to other virtuous actions. Yeah. They all affect each other. They're involved with each other.
Yeah. Does it include the 10 non-virtuous actions and their corresponding 10 virtuous actions not come from the Pali Canon?
Oh no, that comes the 10 non-virtuous actions, you know, is also in the Pali Canon, and the 10 virtuous actions of doing the opposite of those or just restraining yourself from doing those, that's also found in the Pali Canon. But the Pali Canon talks about these 10 virtuous actions in particular, in addition to those other things. And I was thinking that since many of you have heard about the 10 virtues and 10 non-virtues often, that it might be a little bit of variety to go through this list. I'm not saying the Pali Canon lacks the others, because it's very clear. Well, you should know that. I was teaching from the Pali Canon at EML.
Yeah. It was just the way I heard this. Like, well, these, anyway, this helps.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes, digesting what we've heard. Just take a couple of minutes to kind of review what you've heard so you can remember it and practice it. Let's dedicate. Due to the sad, very soon, attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious body, mind, Acha born arise and grow. May that born of no decline, but increase forever.